This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Everyone living today is affected by artificial intelligence. The future of AI has long been the subject of speculation in novels and movies, but there are days when that future seems to be arriving by the minute. Many of us now make daily use of Siri and Alexa, and we keep being told that fully self-driving cars are just around the corner. And consumer-level AI software like ChatGPT has dominated tech conversation this year and made a large splash when it arrived on college campuses. But amid the hype, there are worries about where we're headed. Not just doomsday predictions of a robot apocalypse, but more mundane concerns that many of our jobs will be outsourced to software. On today's show, we're taking a deep dive into what all this means for the future of our society and what our lives, especially our working lives, will be like as they are increasingly intertwined with intelligent machines. Joining us for this conversation is Sheldon Jacobson, a founder professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor Jacobson, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be with you.
Also with us is Jorge Limos, an associate professor in the Department of Economics at the U of I. Professor Limos, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
So, Professor Jacobson, I want to start with you. We've seen this sort of acceleration in the recent years with artificial intelligence and how it's integrated in our society today. Big picture, where would you say we are on this course of evolution?
Well, generative AI actually brought the focus of artificial intelligence to people who had never even realized it was going on. You know, cars that are not fully autonomous, but partially autonomous, people are using them and they don't necessarily think or realize that AI is part of that. But once ChatGPT came forward and everybody realized what it could do, that brought the level of temperature when it came to AI at such a high level that people are now much more aware of it. So we have entered a new phase of awareness for the average person that we were not in 2, 3, 5 years ago, and it will continue to accelerate. So this is an exciting time, but it's also a time that we have to be aware that there are strengths and limitations of where we're heading with AI.
Professor Limos, same question to you. I wonder what you've seen in the past, I don't know, even a decade with artificial intelligence, how it's grown further integrated into our jobs and economy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, AI is making a big splash right now. But as Professor Jacob was saying, this is something that is not new. Researchers have been working on this technology for a long time. And yeah, slowly we are seeing new industries emerge. Every time there is a new technology, and this has happened throughout human history, there is what Joseph Schumpeter would call creative destruction. Some industries disappear and some industries are created. So for example, in the past, we didn't have like Uber or Lyft drivers. That's a new industry that just emerged. We didn't have social media influencers, content moderators. So this is all relatively recent in, you know, the last 10 or 15 years. And in terms of applications, I think maybe we don't see it that clearly, but AI has been working behind curtains and it has helped companies are selling products, like marketing, which ads they show you, which ads they don't show you. These companies collect a lot of information on users, and to decide what to show users, I'm sure there is some artificial intelligence in there. So I think, yeah, it for sure has been present over the last 10 years or so, but I agree that it's going to become much more prominent in the coming 10 years.
You know, Professor Jacobson, the great science fiction writer and futurist Arthur C. Clarke once wrote that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I wonder if today we might say any sufficiently advanced software is indistinguishable from AI. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like everybody now, every company is out there saying we're using AI to leverage, you know, our production of macaroni and cheese or whatever it would be.
Well, it certainly sounds good to say that, but AI is a facilitator. It can make things better. It can enhance performance. It can provide information. And of course, the oil that makes this engine run is data. And data at one point 20, 30 years ago was hard to come by. Today, it is ubiquitous. And as a result of that, with more data, AI becomes more powerful, can provide better information, more insights, and ultimately enhance performance of systems that we take for granted. And we may not even know that they're performing better, except we get better results with them. So it's in some sense hidden, but at the same time, it's very public simultaneously. And it is creating opportunities that every company now knows they have to make some investment in some aspect of AI, or they will fall behind competitively and not be able to maintain their position. This has become a weapon in corporate America. And in many ways, if you don't participate in it, then you're going to end up losing.
So I think one of the most prominent examples we've seen, or for I guess a lot of people who just sort of deal with this casually as consumers, is ChatGPT. Can you talk about, Professor Jacobson, what is ChatGPT, how it's come to dominate the conversation this year?
ChatGPT uses artificial intelligence, in particular machine learning, to be able to respond to questions. It has such a repository of data that it is scanned from the internet and in the public domain that it, in essence, can answer a question as if a person was answering a question. It can write prose. It could create poetry. It can do so many different things that you ask it, and it continues to add new levels of sophistication that make it more and more realistic. However, if we think about the movie 2001, A Space Oddity, this is not HAL. This is not something that appears to be human-like, because although it's very, very efficient in what it can produce, it is not reasoning, and it is simply using known information that it has learned to be able to provide answers to questions. It looks phenomenal, and it is phenomenal, yet it does not have, for no better choice of word, it does not have any feeling. What it has is information. And there's a big difference between that, which separates machines from people.
It's predictive, right? It might say, I mean, it's basically studying all of the language that it could get its hands on or that was fed into it. And it says, if it sees the phrase to be, the most likely next phrase will be or not to be, right? Maybe that's oversimplifying it. Maybe you want to clarify that in some way, but it's basically predicting. And that's why you sometimes get wildly inaccurate results, right?
Well, predictive analytics is at the core of artificial intelligence. We all want to know what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month. If you're a sports fan, you want to know who's going to win the game before the game is even played. We have an obsession with prediction. And for fun in sports, that's one thing. When it comes to corporations, government, prediction is critical. And as a result of that, it provides tremendous value to consumers indirectly, because the people that they're buying services and goods from ultimately are going to be using artificial intelligence.
Professor Lemus, I wonder how you have seen ChatGPT arrive. I mean, are you seeing it affecting students, who are either, still in your classes or maybe looking at jobs in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I have used ChatGPT myself. I think it's fantastic. It's like having an assistant. Before I would have a question, even writing code, it writes code. If I have a question in my writing, it can simplify some paragraphs. So I think it's an amazing tool. And students have also, I'm sure they know how to use it, especially for summarizing readings or answer some homework questions. So it's a little bit concerning, like how we have to evolve as educators when students are using this tool, ChatGPT. As I mentioned before, every time there is a new technology, industries have to evolve. Some are going to disappear and some new industries are going to show up. The same applies for education. We have to evolve and understand that ChatGPT is out there and students are probably using it. And that is not a bad thing. It's just simplifying things that the students could do before. The only thing that concerns me a little bit about ChatGPT is that students begin relying too much on it, and then they start doing the thinking by themselves. So the way I want to think about ChatGPT is like having a tutor. You can ask questions and you get some answers, but at the end of the day, students are the ones that have to be putting the work and learning. We cannot rely on ChatGPT forever.
Right? Yeah, you don't want the tutor doing the assignment for you.
Exactly. What are
you learning in the end? All right, we need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation. When we come back, we're speaking about the future of AI, particularly as it relates to work. We're talking about this with economics associate professor Jorge Limus from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and computer science professor Sheldon Jacobson, also from U of I. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the future of artificial intelligence and really the present of artificial intelligence, particularly as it relates to our working lives. And we're talking about this with Sheldon Jacobson, who's a founder professor of computer science in the Granger College of Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Jorge Limus, who is associate professor in the Department of Economics at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. Maybe you have used some AI tools in your working life, ChatGPT, or maybe one of the image generating programs that's out there. We want to hear about what your experience has been. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. I tried using ChatGPT a little bit to help me see if I could refine some questions for the show. Frankly, I have not been super impressed, but, you know, I can say that's maybe put in on my own prompting. Maybe I have some things to learn about how to get better results out of it. But there's, in my experience so far, there's still no substitute for, you know, thorough preparation and working with a great team of people we have here to formulate, you know, questions, more precise questions and hopefully more evocative questions to sort of facilitate our conversations. But maybe you've had a different experience. Again, 800-222-9455. All right, Professor Limus, let's talk about the job market and, you know, sort of the workforce in general. Are you seeing new industries being created or maybe certain jobs having a less rosy outlook on account of these advances we've been seeing in artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And this, as I mentioned before, this always happens when we have a new technology. During the Industrial Revolution, people were worried that they were all going to be replaced by machines. And we know that that's not the case. Some jobs were replaced by machines, but then people learned how to do other things. Same thing is happening with the AI. You just mentioned one new job, actually. You know, you mentioned I used ChatGPT and I tried to prompt something to get questions and maybe my prompt was not very good. Well, there are people now that are getting hired to figure out which is the best way to ask ChatGPT to get the answer that you get, right? So that's an industry we didn't have before and now it's out there. So yeah, absolutely new jobs are gonna be created, new industries will be created, and some other jobs will be replaced. But, you know, the question that we want to answer is, you know, what industries will be replaced? What kind of new industry will emerge? And how fast is this transition from an old economy where AI is not everywhere to a new economy where we have AI everywhere? And answering those questions, you know, we can look at some data and have some guesses, but at the end of the day, nobody is like 100% sure of what's going to happen. And one thing that I realize a lot of people are kind of confused about is that if you have AI and now instead of, you know, having just one worker do one job, you can use AI and that worker can do that job 10 times faster. That doesn't mean that the company is going to, if you have 10 workers, you are going to fire nine and keep one doing the job of those 10 workers. What may happen is that you keep all those 10 workers and now you're more productive. You do 10 times faster what the same 10 workers used to do. So some industries are going to benefit from AI by having workers be more productive, by having workers change what they do at their job. So suppose that my job requires to do some monotone routine tasks and some other more complex tasks when I need to really like focus and think. well, those monotone, boring tasks are probably going to be replaced by AI, and I'm going to use all my time thinking in these more complex questions, right? So maybe I'm not going to get fired, but like the type of work that I do is going to change. And I feel like this is going to happen in a lot of industries. Feel like are more at risk, like maybe, you know, people that translate, because AI is really good at translation. So those kind of jobs are perhaps more at risk than others.
Interesting. You know, Professor Jacobson, I want to ask you about some of the downsides of AI, right? And I mean, I'm sure people out there have seen movies like Interstellar, which has a positive vision of AI. There are more dystopian ideas like Ex Machina or The Terminator or 2001, A Space Odyssey. Can you break down the technology of what our current crop of AI is doing? Do they actually have the capacity to replicate, you know, human creativity and human will, I guess, the way the HAL 9000 in 2001 was, that it, you know, could actually decide that it needs to kill the astronauts it's supposed to be serving?
Well, we'd like to think that that's a trajectory that we're on in terms of being able to replicate human reasoning and rationale. But the fact is, that is an enormous leap forward. We have to stay within the boundaries of the tools. And remember, these models are typically trained on data, and data is created ultimately by people, by experience, by information that human beings are in fact putting out. As a result of that, whatever you put into the data is going to get represented in the AI outputs and responses. And if you have garbage in the data, that garbage will be in fact promulgated through the AI system. So that is a risk. The other thing is that with so much data, we are starting to look, in fact, biometrics, which is a very big issue, and people are concerned about privacy issues. I think that concern is overblown simply because people don't always understand the limitations of using that data and the limitations of even having that data being infiltrated. Certainly security is always an issue, and cybersecurity is really important. But there's so many opportunities for AI that we don't even see, because we think about the jobs lost. But what about places where we have shortages of people to work and we need help? And one place that I have advocated is air traffic control, that we have a shortage of air traffic controllers. And if they're jobs can be enhanced and supported through AI systems, which I believe has that potential, then the pressure on them will be reduced, and then the number of people that are available today may be sufficient to keep the air systems safe. So there's so many opportunities. One other big risk, of course, is that we're not alone. This is not like this is a United States advance. Every country in the world who has the resources is investing in artificial intelligence. And if we don't push the boundary forward, someone else will. And if it's one of our near peers who we don't have the best relationships with, then that can be a threat to national security. So as a result, we have to be very, very careful that we continue to be on the cutting edge and make investments to ensure that we are ahead of everybody around us.
You know, that's interesting. You mentioned air traffic control, and some of our listeners might know you are, we've had you on the show before to talk about travel issues. This is an area of interest of yours and expertise as well. I wonder, though, when I think about, right, humans make all kinds of mistakes driving cars, and yet a so-called self-driving car or a car that's trying to become self-driving makes a mistake and kills a pedestrian, and it is national news. And one imagines that there are many, many, well, we don't have to imagine. There was actually a big report. I think it was in the New York Times or maybe the Washington Post about all the mistakes and the near misses that are happening in our air traffic control system, which is really being stretched to a breaking point. If an AI system were to make a mistake, though, I think people would look at that a lot more skeptically than trusting a human. How do you bridge that gap?
Well, people are very unforgiving of technology where they're more forgiving of people. So let's talk about autonomous vehicles. We read occasionally about an autonomous vehicle causing an accident, potentially a fatality. Yet in the United States, on the order of over 100 people are killed every day in automobile accidents. And that's been true for many, many years. As a result of that, that doesn't make headline news. But if we had one fatality due to an AI system, that would make the news, even though potentially many of the other fatalities that people would be causing have been prevented. So in many ways, we lose that perspective on the benefits as well as the risks. AI has risks. That is indisputable. The question is, are we making good trades in reducing risk when we move from a people-centered system to a AI-centered system? It doesn't mean the AI runs the whole air traffic control system. It means they support the people. And we look at areas where we can afford to push it off the AI, like transitions potentially at certain points in the airport or out of the airport after they've flown off, that these little savings of time can result in tremendous reduction of focus of the air traffic controllers without compromising safety and security.
Professor Lemus, I want to ask you where you are watching for the various risks of AI. What has you most worried? And it, I mean, we were talking about privacy a little while ago. It could be that. It could be something else. Take it where you will.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, as Professor Jacobson said, AI is good as long as the data that you feed into the models are good. And one important concern is biases. Right, like if we're gonna rely on AI to make important decisions, like who to hire, who to fire, and for that we are just feeding data that is biased, our decisions or AI decisions will be biased. So that seems to be an important problem, bias and discrimination. And I don't know the technical aspects on how scientists are trying to deal with that, but we know that data generated by humans contain a lot of biases. The other problem that I see with AI is that it can create some, it can damage the economy while we transition to a new economy where AI is well established. And what I mean by that is that a lot of people are going to have to retrain. People will have to change occupations and learn how to work with AI alongside. So how fast are we going to be able to help people transition, and what kind of policies governments can implement to help people transition from their old job to a new job that requires AI? And what's interesting, and I think this is different to industrial revolution or other technologies throughout history, is typically these new technologies affected people that were kind of low-skilled workers. But AI actually is a technology that's going to affect industries across the board, and it's going to affect people that are highly skilled workers too. So it's going to affect the whole economy. And as a policy matter, I think we need to think carefully on how much resources we want to invest in retraining. Do we want to provide companies with maybe tax breaks to retrain their own workers? And I think that's something that hasn't been discussed that much. And if we're not careful, that can cause problems in the economy.
Professor Jacobson, I think this will probably be the last question we have time for today. What should everyday people, maybe knowledge workers in particular, be doing to prepare for what's coming in the future?
Well, realizing that this is a transition period that we're in, and transition periods are typically very unstable just by their very nature. As a result of that, embracing the opportunities and realizing that there may be some hiccups along the way is acceptable. The whole education system in our country is going to have to be revamped simply because the needs of the population and the workforce is going to change and transition. And people who are in their 50s and 60s may not view this as being an important issue, but people in their 20s and 30s, it's critical. Realize that as we transition, there will be some hiccups, there will be some upheavals, but there will be opportunities. And those opportunities have the potential to truly change society and how people live, ideally for the better. But there will be, in fact, some hiccups.
Sheldon Jacobson is founder professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Jorge Lemus is associate professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to be taking another dive into COVID-19. It's been a long time since we've talked about it, but we are coming up on the fall and winter airborne illness season. There's a new vaccine coming online, and we've seen some places in the country track an uptick in cases, but there's really not a lot of testing. So we're going to talk about everything that's been going on with COVID and what we need to be thinking about that for the months ahead. Plus, some Illinois researchers have been doing work on long COVID for the people for whom this is still a daily fact of life. We're going to be talking about their work as well. That's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Kennedy Vincent and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Nick Boyven. Technical direction and engineering comes from Steve Mork and Jason Croft. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. I want to urge you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. There you can find links to our past segments as well as links to our podcast, or just search for us, The 21st Show, wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.